Greetings, everybody. My name is Jignasha, and I am delighted to be your host today for today's Awaken Talks. And welcome and thank you, everybody, for joining us today. The purpose of these calls is to share stories that nurture our own inner transformation while planting seeds of for a more compassionate world. We do this, we generally do this by holding space and holding conversations, collective conversations with our guest speakers who inspire us in a very service-oriented way. And behind every call, there is an entire team of service-based volunteers whose invisible work allows us to hold space in this kind of a way. Today, our special guest speaker is Bindu Malini Narayan Swami. We will begin the call with a minute of silence to anchor ourselves in the present moment. Thank you and welcome again, everybody, to our fortnightly Awaken Talks, today in conversation with Gayatri Ramachandran and Bindu Malini Narayan Swami. In a few minutes, we will start our dialogue with our speaker. And by the top of the hour, we'll invite all of you to share your questions and reflections. At any time, you can submit a question, a comment using our webcast form on our live stream page. You can also email us at askask@servicespace.org. And just a friendly reminder that we are operating in the virtual space with the usual constraints of technology, overloaded bandwidth and audio issues, etc. So things can go wrong. So please know that if there is a technical glitch, we'll be back as soon as possible. And so thank you so much for understanding. And our moderator today is Gayatri Ramachandran. Gayatri is a permaculture gardener, NVC practitioner, and a scientist by training and a service-based volunteer. So I'll now invite Gayatri to introduce our guest speaker, Bindu Malini, and get the ball rolling. Thank you, Gayatri.
Thank you so much, Jiggy, and welcome everyone to this conversation with Bindu. I will say a few words to try and introduce Bindu, though there are many interviews online and it's quite hard to do justice in just a few lines. But Bindu is a singer, composer, and an artist. Who's weaving a tapestry with her art in ways that honor tradition and also stretching boundaries to embrace the unknown. She was born into a family of Carnatic musicians and was immersed in that environment and lineage for many years in her childhood. Sometime in around 2009, she undertook this very kind of unknown pilgrimage where she went to learn Hindustani music or Talim with her Baba, Ustad Abdul Rashid Khan. He was 99 years old at that time and also more or less blind, though he regained his sight partially subsequently. And she describes going under his Talim as her heart finding shade under a tree. And it was an extremely transformative journey and experience for her, which changed the course of her life and brought her back to pursuing music as a calling, as a profession, and as her offering of gift. There's a lot we can say about Bindu. One of the things that is most prominent, I think, is that she collaborates extensively with artists, with social workers, with people from different walks of life. She's an exquisite teller of stories. She's done performances such as Ankat Kahani and Kabir, Khusro Ke Rang and the Life of Amir Khusro, The Threshold with MD Pallavi. And she's also scored music for movies and won a national award for Nati Charami. In a radical response to the COVID second wave in India just a few months ago, she started offering music and silence every day to just be here for you. And as one of our friends, service-based friends puts it, Bindu should be what the doctor prescribes for our souls. So thank you so much, Bindu, for being with us here today. And I would like to invite you to bless the space between us and within us with a song offering.
Namaste. I'll sing and then we'll speak.
Ah.
ಹೊಸ್ತಿಲೊಳಗೆ ಇರಿಸಿದ ಜ್ಯೋತಿಯನ್ನು ಹೊಸ್ತಿಲೊಳಗೆ ಇರಿಸಿದ ಜ್ಯೋತಿಯಂತೆ ಒಳಗೆ ನೋಡುವನು ತಾನೆ ಹೊರಗೆ ನೋಡುವನು ತಾನೆ ಒಳಗೆ ನೋಡುವನು ತಾನೆ ಹೊರಗೆ ನೋಡುವನು ತಾನೆ ಅರಿದೆನೆಂಬುವನು ತಾನೆ ಮರೆದೆನೆಂಬುವನು ತಾನೆ ಅರಿದೆನೆಂಬುವನು ತಾನೆ ಮರೆದೆನೆಂಬುವನು ತಾನೆ ಕಂಡೆನೆಂಬುವನು ತಾನೆ ಕಾಣೆನೆಂಬುವನು ತಾನೆ ಕಂಡೆನೆಂಬುವನು ತಾನೆ ಕಾಣೆನೆಂಬುವನು ತಾನೆ ದೃಷ್ಟದೃಕ್ಕು ದೃಶ್ಯವೆಂಬ ತ್ರಿಪುಟ ಭೇದವ ಮೀರಿ ದೃಷ್ಟದೃಕ್ಕು ದೃಶ್ಯವೆಂಬ ತ್ರಿಪುಟ ಭೇದವ ಮೀರಿ ಆನಂದ ಆನಂದ ಆನಂದದಲ್ಲಿ ಆಡುವ ಶರಣ ಆನಂದದಲ್ಲಿ ಆಡುವ ಶರಣ ಮಾಪನಿದನಿ I wanted to start with this song. This song is by a Vachana poet called Lingamma. This is anywhere between the 9th and 11th century, if I'm not wrong, or a little later, 12th century probably, when there was a huge movement of both social and inner transformation in Karnataka, which is called the Vachana movement. Hence, I thought this is so apt for today, where we are talking about both the inner transformation that leading to the outer transformation. And this song is where she talks about the lamp which is on the doorsill, threshold, how that sheds light both inside and outside. So a sharana, or the seeker, the one who's on this path, looks inside and outside. It also says, he knows, he forgets. He sees, he does not see. When the seer, the seeing, and the object that is seen merges, the sharana goes into bliss. And he is completely losing himself in bliss, is what Lingamma talks about in this. So the threshold then becomes the line where you're probably, you can see it as the line in the center, which is making you see both inside and outside, or that can be the border where you're trying to constantly have this interaction between the inside and outside. So, because you're calling this playing at the edges, so I thought, we don't know whether edge is being in the center or really being in the edge. And what does that mean? Yeah, so, and also how my guru Baba once said, to be a fakir, to be a somebody who's in the path, doesn't mean you have to leave everything and go into the jungles. It's about being in the practice while being in your samsara. So all this seemed to resonate in the same way.
Yeah, thank you for that. That was, I think, a beautiful, very apt introduction to what I hope is going to be intimate conversation today. And, you know, leading, I would, one question I think I would really like you to speak to is, because we've been talking about a little about music as soul food, as you know, and what is slow organic music look like, you know, how is it a component of maybe to live consciously and responsibly on this earth? So maybe the very broad question is really, you know, what is music to you? Because I've heard you say it's a safe space, that it reminds you of your mother's lap, because, you know, that's how you grow up first, literally almost imbibing, like osmosis, the sounds of songs and music in your mother's and grandmother's household. And I've also heard you say that, you know, when you first met Ustad Abdul Rashid Khan, your Baba, his music helped you shut your mind down. And to me, it sounds like, you know, that you could, the mind could go quiet and the heart could begin to express. So I'm just, I guess two questions is, what is music to you, and how do you think, or do you think the container through which a music emanates that has an influence on the quality of sound? And how has that been for you over the years?
Wow, I think this song again is the reminder of the constant osmosis between, like you said, is the singing shaping the container, or the container bringing out the resonance of the sound of the voice, or it's both. Because as much as I've said that my mother's lap and the music associated with that, even my grandmother, or the my grandmother's home, where there was always music, was the space of safety and play, I guess, you know. At the same time, when you start looking at any of this and step out, there are spaces that you need to negotiate and understand that not every space is what you think it is, and it has an impact, and then again you kind of recalibrate yourself. So to find that journey back to music being a safe space itself was somewhere through music. So I started like that, then I got kind of lost or pulled here there, and then reaching Baba, where I think it was so much more easier and less burdensome to stop making sense of everything. The demand to make sense of everything started happening when I went back to Baba, and then I realized it's okay. And I guess what it really helped me do was acknowledge fear. So I think that's the safe space he created again through music, to help me connect with my own fears, and to also say it's okay to be fearful, or okay to acknowledge and accept that there is fear. And then also know that you don't have to be clinging on to that or be in the clutches of that. So that is what, again, his music brought me back to. And somewhere I think, irrespective of how I sing, what I sing, I try to create that space for myself and whoever the listener is, I guess. So my singing usually is an invitation for others to join in that space than to push the force outside. It's more like pulling in a way, or creating that kind of a vortex around, which I have witnessed in his presence. That he's actually completely going inwards and then pulsating from there in a different way that we could really once feel that it was a scorching April or May, and Calcutta's heat is really unforgiving and the humidity. Yet when he was singing a Jayajayavanti, a Dvijavanti, I could really feel a cool breeze. And that was the music doing it, and more than the music, him. So he had shaped himself into that vessel through music and into music, and somewhere not without resonating to what's outside him. So like Kabir actually says, Guru Kumhar Sish Kumbh Hai. Now the Hindi gets challenging for me. Gad gad khade khot, antar hath sahar de, bahar bahe chot. So couple of things here. So the imagery of a pot being shaped, how you put your hand in and also beat from outside to shape it. So the Guru does that. That he also holds you, but he also beats you into shape. It's a very tricky line, you know, you don't beat it too hard, at the same time hold it firmly. At the same time, I think the world also works that way. When you're shaping yourself, you're pushing against that force while it's hitting and somewhere molding yourself and adapting. And I guess that's the way I'm working with this vessel of music, or how I create music and context, music in context, and constantly shaping and reshaping. And yeah, so we can talk about how music and context make a big difference of how do you fit it both and change both.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to hear more on that thread, but you know, there's one thing that I wanted to pick up because it was kind of really very insightful and resonant for me is when you, I think, said that going to Baba allowed you to see and acknowledge your fears. So it sounds to me like the more of yourself you can see and accept, even, you know, in some sense, the difficult parts or what you find more, the shadow, one could call it maybe, that you find more difficult, the more your music also integrates all of you. Almost, it sounds like music integrates and your music deepens when you are integrated more in like the quality of your sound and voice. Does that resonate in some sense that it's like, that it helps you and it also invites you to a deeper sound?
Absolutely. Yes. So maybe I'm playing too close to the skin, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah. But and maybe I was thinking that that's one of the reasons why music has such healing power in some sense, because you can just integrate or accept more of you. You can just relax into that space without I don't know, without resistance, which, you know, kind of brings me to this whole topic of surrender, because I think it's been such an an epochal point in your journey, because you say that, you know, your Baba was one of the few people whose feet you were able to surrender to, and that you generally have been a questioning creative child and spirit, and, you know, in rebellious in many ways, not willing to just bow down before people or traditions unless they made sense to you. But it sounds to me when you describe like you going to your Baba and just managing that moment of surrender, that, you know, there were other forces at work and there was not that much inner resistance. So I'm just curious if you could say a little more about just how that happened, and did it surprise you while it was happening? And, you know, because I think it was so different and then it has shaped so much of your life. So.
Yeah. It did surprise me because I didn't even know that existed, first of all. From the kind of life I was kind of hurtling towards, it was really like the momentum was too much and I couldn't make sense of what's going on. And I had set the ball rolling long ago and I didn't know whether I could apply the brakes or nor kind of move. So I had to really abruptly somehow go dash somewhere. So I think that was Baba. I just closed my eyes and went and dashed pretty much because I don't think you can consciously apply brakes and safely land somewhere, or at least I didn't have that. So initially there was too much impatience and very result-oriented mindset that I went with, but nothing happened in the way I wanted it to or in my time. So there was nothing else I could do than just hang around there and see what happens. And while just hanging around there, I could suddenly see a lot of things are happening around. Be it music, be it people, be it interaction, be it the language that was not known to me, everything. And there was no other way. The more I kind of pushed my agenda, the more I was kind of getting frustrated because it just wouldn't happen. And we need to keep in mind that he was 99 and I'm like 24 or something. And there's really like, he comes from a different era. So I couldn't get things if I wanted it the way I wanted it. I had to just wait for it. So I was choicelessly in surrender that way. You know, it was not like, oh, I'll go and surrender. I didn't have a choice there. So that's about it. I could say I was helpless, but that helplessness was nice. Later, I realized. It wasn't easy. Now, when I look back, I'm like saying, phew, okay. But then I'm really confused and frustrated and a lot of things. There was a lot of support from my family also to kind of first raising eyebrows, say, what is she up to? But later saying, okay, it's her journey. Let's see whatever she has to do, she has to do. Just that silent trust and not questioning itself, I think was quite interesting. And yeah, you are right. I don't believe in falling at people's feet and surrendering randomly. Basically, whatever happens, if it happens before I knew or I have decided, then it's authentic enough for me. I'll just go by that. I can't decide to go and enjoy some music, but without me knowing if I have started to cry listening to some music or something or seeing something, I'm like, okay. That means my mind was not doing it. It happened naturally. It's my assumption. Who knows? I have my parameters of tastes and flavors, I guess. Again, this thing about being fragile, being vulnerable, and to know things may not and go the way you want it, at the same time hoping for it and preparing. The other thing was to go and perform, to be on stage and put yourself out there. That was a big test because fear has different ways of operating. So, you know, my throat will get choked many things will go wrong. The tambura will never get tuned, a lot of things. But slowly over time, you'll say, okay, everything that can go wrong will go wrong. But you can still do what you can. And to still be able to not be disturbed by it is also a practice. It didn't happen right away. And it may not happen even now, like how Jignasha said, through this technology, the network will go wrong, this will go wrong, you can't hear me. So everywhere, I think we are really getting challenged to see how we can keep our cool. What does that mean then? I don't even know if I'm answering your question anymore or I'm like going somewhere else. Yeah, but...
No, I think that was... you did answer about surrender and the fact that it kind of happened, as I hear it, not in this, like, you know, like in the cinematic, beautiful, one fluid motion, but, you know, with you trying other things and, you know, trying your old habitual patterns. And they were not, those were all basically, you know, like cul-de-sacs. They were roads with no going nowhere. And this was the road which had the energetic flow. So in some ways it was like all other paths were blocked. So walk down this. And something I think was happening internally, I think you describe being so moved by his music and his process that in some ways other forms of resistance were melting. So this, you know, at some point became choiceless, easeless flow. And, you know, you began to be sort of shaped by it so dramatically. So yes, I hear that. Yeah.
And to add to that.
Yes.
If I see now, one is the mind, but the other is the voice, which didn't go without training. It went with a very strong training in Carnatic. So that means here, no matter what, I have a body memory, I have a voice memory of being a particular way. And I'm trying to fit into another mold of classical music. And there it was his job to sort of see what to do with me. Because, you know that it's difficult to kind of repair or reset a formed thing than just starting off from a blank slate, right? It's easier to draw. So even here to be okay to say, man, even no matter what rag I sing, I'm just sounding Carnatic. That frustration to him hearing me back in that voice, but slowly over time, changing in a way where what is there before is not completely erased out of me. At the same time, building a new house while that is still there. And initially, I had to completely stop singing Carnatic for a long time so that my voice tries to start producing different sounds. It's like learning a new language to keep. But at the same time, the mind has got that Carnatic framework and it's trying to fit every information into that and constantly coming from that. And again, not all of it was making sense. So he'll just say, you know, like, can you stop making sense of what it is? Just reproduce. So as they call it, it's called Sina Basina, where you're just absorbing from that other being. And it's very hard to not analyze. But over time, I could see now that how he is constantly being fast enough to put you on at a speed where you are just before the mind. And then the actual talim starts. If you kind of pull back, the mind starts rushing in. It's okay. It's like going and grazing and then ruminating over it. First, you just like graze. And then you go and sit back and say, now what happened? It's like that. Yeah.
Yeah, beautiful. I love the cow metaphor also, you know, the grazing and ruminating and the amount of time it takes to metabolize, to make it your own, right? Like a cow passes through four stomachs, then regurgitates. And then literally it's a process. But then, you know, I mean, as a gardener, I have to say the byproduct is fantastic. So there's something that is so, you know, metabolically rich about going through that almost, you know. And I have this question for you, which is so connected to, so one question is, what is your relationship to Carnatic music now? Like, you know, given your sculpting and your sort of training under a different voice culture, are you able to sing Carnatic songs so I'll
absolutely in fact maybe I'm improving even in that, I must say. Definitely in terms of voice production, yes. In terms of knowledge, I should seek more. I want to learn more and deepen it. And but definitely the other thing where the fear, why I spoke about fear, was after training in Carnatic for a long time, my biggest block was Manodharma. And I couldn't get into improvisation or spontaneity. So fear again was what was blocking. And even to accept that there's method to madness, I was refusing to accept that it has to just flow. And then flowing is also a training. You kind of prepare yourself to flow. So you can't just expect suddenly to ease into something. So having been able to now say, okay, I'm ready to kind of flow, coming back to Carnatic is lovely. I think I'm a lot more prepared now to really absorb the whole magnificent tapestry of Carnatic. And also I think, yeah, like you said, slow. Even in my singing, I'm very comfortable with slowly savoring sounds and notes. So I have a tendency to kind of pull down the pace a lot more than maybe the optimal speed, momentum. So I do that with Carnatic also, but I don't mind right now with that practice of both of them kind of flowing one into the other and coming back and creating a different kind of a space. So I love Carnatic. I've always loved Carnatic. And even my mama, when she listens to me now, she'll be like, "Ni Carnatic partner, it's home. It's home. That can't really go too wrong. You know, everything else is acquired, but the sound of Carnatic is very much, it can't be deleted from me." So that's also there. Somewhere in all this, this is classic. I just forgot what I wanted to say, but that's exactly what I wanted to talk about, I guess. Is this song also talks, Lingamma's song talks about knowing and forgetting. So I used to have a memory which was a little too painfully strong. And I used to have this photographic memory and I'll remember everything. I'll even go back and tell people, you did this that day. Now I'm very happily forgetting in a very embarrassing way also. But when I heard the song and I was like, oh, it's given. It's okay to know and forget. So somewhere also say, okay, this song seems to give me permission to say it's okay to do that. So I'm actually thinking, like when we had this conversation and I was thinking about, we are all, especially when we want to deal with loss and grief, there is this huge thing about fear of being forgotten or that we will forget something. Or to constantly keep something in remembrance. So what is important to be remembered and what is okay to be forgotten, I don't know now anymore. So I think that's interesting to talk about. What would you say?
Absolutely. No, I'd love to explore that thread. And to me, you know, this is such a potent thread because, you know, it's so resonant of, I think, the culture of our times, almost like, you know, we're in this data gathering, documenting time where remembering and recording is given such importance, like, you know, making archiving, like this is the sort of thing that is honored, elevated, respected, you know, awarded, rewarded. And, you know, and one of the things I think about being an oral tradition was that you were invited into that flow of remembering and forgetting. And by not setting things down, I think maybe because you were in that flow of doing that, you went to the heart, maybe I'm saying, I'm not elevating oral traditions. There are great advantages to being a culture of record and so on. But I think by some time while being in that flow, maybe you give yourself the time and space to touch what is worthy of truly remembering and what needs to be forgotten, right? And like that piece you touched about, part of the healing of almost say grief or anything is trust, is letting go, is knowing that some things have to be forgotten, but you keep the memories maybe when you're dealing with grief. Or, you know, when I fall ill, I often think impermanence is great here because I know that at some point it will pass. It's only when it's harder to, you know, feel the joys of impermanence when you're, like, I don't know, enjoying something greatly. It's easier to maybe appreciate it when, you know, maybe you're having some difficulty. So, yeah, I would love to hear more about this thread. of what is in your own exploration, what have you touched as, you know, what, or what are you still exploring maybe?
Yeah, the thing is, now there is a sense of lightness when I realize, okay, there are certain things which I don't remember anymore. So, and I guess probably it had done its function. Something from the past had a grip on you because, and then once that pattern or that thing was resolved, then the memory didn't have an impact. And then the memory stayed as just an idea or information or an image. And then over time, even that kind of faded away. So now when I think of it, apart from human beings, I don't know which other creatures really archiving and putting it all for later and all that. So what needs to be absorbed and assimilated stays, like digestion or how the gut can absorb, and that's about it. What has gone, what has been eliminated for all the right and wrong reasons probably, but then we don't have to worry, I guess. And like you said, there is also this extra overload of everything right now. So I guess that's also why I'm kind of forgetting a lot more now. And like you said, yeah, I was reading this book which says, what makes you not a Buddhist? So it talks about this whole idea of impermanence, to say that the fundamental idea of what Buddha said was that everything is assembled. So the fact that everything is assembled means it's dependent on so many other factors for it to be this. So that means the permanency of all these factors decides how this particular thing is, and which is so not how the world works. Everything has its variables and variations and changes. So nothing can therefore be consistently the same way. And that would mean, yeah, the good news is that even the bad stuff is impermanent. And probably the good news is that even the good things pass. So yeah, since you spoke about that impermanence, it's actually quite liberating also to say even bad stuff that we are going through or whatever is difficult can also get dissolved at some point. And to go back to the initial thing about slow and organic that you're talking about, so I guess organic is where some things start forming on its own also, right? And you kind of let it happen, and that's how it is, the nature of it. So to sort of see what happens when something is left to happen on its own is one thing. And the other is, it's a long journey, but I try to kind of go the other way than building, how to disrupt and dissolve, to break it into lesser things, to go minimal, but can it still hold? Can it still hold by its own essence? So even with music, I guess that's my, that's where my space of experimentation is and has been, to say, can it still stand on its own without extra things? Of course, when then other parts come in, let them come in an equal measure or inform each other. So to go solo, first of all, it was just me and Vedant. It was just the voice and guitar. Now it's even lesser. So to say it's okay to be that way, and to say even this has its value, is what I'm trying.
Yeah, beautiful. And you know, that's such an organic almost segue into this other question I want to ask you, which is about collaboration. You know, I heard, I think Mangai, the Tamil theater artist, describe you as, you know, like someone who crosses genres, that and that you do this with such kind of fluidity and such to us at least, those of us who see the final product, is you're one of those, I think a rare group of musicians who collaborates so extensively, whether it's Vedant or, MD Pallavi with Threshold, or even your husband Vasu, or, this Indo-Chinese collaboration that's upcoming called Saath Saath. So, I have a couple of questions on this. One is, I have the sense maybe that, it's easier to cross genres or go towards trying to fuse anything if you have a greater sense of rootedness in your, where you are. Like, it's actually easier to, come into Sangam if you're sure, of where you are, like Ganga and Yamuna. Like, there's no confusion about what, and it's much hard. So I'm curious whether that's your sense too, that, the more rooted you are in your Hindustani practice, the more you were able to, even flow back to Carnatic or even collaborate with others, whether the rootedness actually gives you more freedom. I'm curious about that. And then I'd love to just hear about, how do you choose who to collaborate with? And we're like, what's your process? I'm sure we can glean wisdom from that.
Okay, so I can't deny that there is no rootedness, but am I rooted in a very specific way? That I don't know, but I guess I know I can come back to a sound. That's probably my fundamental fallback plan, that somewhere I can just make some sound and that I have those notes and the spaces in between those notes also. That's about it. And in fact, silence. When in doubt, just silence, I guess, works even better. Or when you really know something, even to be silent then is also okay, I guess. So these are my fallback rootedness tools. And after that, like I said, since I already saw how I fail miserably to constantly fit everything into only the information or the framework that I know, like when I went to Baba, to constantly put it into one Carnatic box was really hampering the growth. So to remind myself saying, don't do that. Yeah, it's we have our patterns, we have our framework and structure, just like language, to kind of filter and make sense of things. But at the same time, to know that it's what we make sense of and things that we don't make sense of that kind of makes it full. And to constantly allow for those silences, those gaps, those spaces in between meaning, to the verbal, nonverbal, all those spaces to be present. That helps in the collaboration because we meet, we see what the other person comes with, what I come with, what is the intention. Then we have conversations. Then the music happens. So I think the choice of collaboration is not just the music, but the person. So who is that other person? What do we want to make together? It's like a marriage every time, actually. So to kind of see where is the in-between space you can come to. And widen that in-between space and fill that more. And I think, in a way, Threshold, that was a great learning to say how that can be made possible, the way MD Pallavi and I worked and how it was to work with her. We just met first and said, what are the questions? What are we as individuals interested in? We know we have our music anyway. Everybody knows that. We also know. Finally, we're going to be able to give you music. But what can we do with it? It all started with conversations. And then from there to playfully explore saying, can we try this? Can we do this? Can we do that? Does it still make sense? And is there a flow? Keeping that learning. And with Vedant also, he really is so open. He'll first allow things to happen and then see what one can do with it. And so it was a training in collaboration, with all the people that I've met and worked with. And when you spoke about language and Sangam of these few things, now I realize why I'm very comfortable with knowing that I know some and then I don't know much is probably because now I'm learning Tamil, to read and write Tamil, actually. So it's interesting how I can speak a language, I can understand a language so well, yet there is one faculty of that which I didn't get trained in. So to clearly say that I know enough, but I don't know so much. And probably even with music, that's how it is. That I know I have some enough information, enough knowledge to operate with, but there's much more that I don't know. And between this knowing and not knowing, a lot of things are possible also. So to say, let's not miss out on that range. Again, I'm meandering now. Please pull me back. Or is this the time to sing?
That would be great. If a song is coming up, you're welcome to. But I do think you answered, like, you know, some, I think, very beautiful insights. One is, I heard your name, humility, you know, towards the end when you talked about what is it, what are the things you don't know. So I think that sense of having that humility really allows you to enter a collaborative space with openness and the willingness to explore together. And I think you also said so much of it is about initial connections and conversations and just kind of setting the stage for, you know, what is it at this moment that wants to come out of this, our meeting together, right? Like, we come with our own pieces, but what is it that we can co-create in some sense? So yeah, so I do hear that. And I'm just curious because, you know, we see so many collaborative efforts, but there are things obviously we don't end up seeing. So have you, have any collaborations that, you know, you were hopeful about that looked like they were working but didn't, or have there been more, you know, struggles in some that could you maybe, I don't know, name where those were if you're willing? And
I lost you a bit, but if I can understand, I guess you spoke about how the collaboration.
So I was just wondering, like, if you could tell us about, like, we end up seeing the output of, like, the collaborations that worked out really well, you know, that in some sense, I guess. But I'm just curious whether, you know, there have been things that you were, you know, felt maybe that would work out and didn't. And so, you know, maybe throwing light more about the inner aspects, the struggles, and maybe the disappointments, if there have been any.
I think many a times, some things don't work. And even while collaborating, you know, we are all constantly in a different pace and different. So we are always not on the same page. To arrive there takes some time. So even in that, there are struggles. So I do fight at that time, and I kind of get frustrated. But it's a learning to sometimes just disengage and see what's happening. And I have definitely learned that if I'm a bit agitated or unsure, I make sure everything around me collapses. So to kind of catch myself before doing that has become an important thing, that what is my role in the damage that is getting created? And can I, first of all, be mindful of that, and then see, once I figure that out, I'm like, okay, now I know this is my part of the damage. Now that I'm aware of that, and I say, okay, let's see what is the damage and probably see how it can be contained. And many a times when I realize my own role in the damage causing, it kind of resolves itself, or I become okay with whatever the result is. Other times, yeah, it's easier to control the whatever is happening. To be a little more patient has helped. And so the thing is, for me, I guess, somebody who's a skeptic, somebody who's super cynical, somebody who cannot really quickly trust, somebody who's super impatient. And now apparently, now I'm okay with it. I'm also very intimidating. So I'm a little less intimidating now, I suppose, because people now openly come and tell me you're very intimidating. So, which means they find it okay to tell me that. So it's an improvement. Now I don't know if you're frozen. Is it my internet or yours?
Can you hear?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Am I frozen? Okay.
Not now. I can hear you.
Okay. No, but I was hearing you throughout. So I hope. Yeah. No, I really loved what you shared there about, you know, just this, just receiving honest feedback as a gift, right? Because it's like a window and it allows you. I kind of have reminded of Eckhart Tolle saying, relationships are not supposed to make you happy. They're supposed to make you conscious. So, you know, just being in a collaborative space where someone is a mirror, and like you said, you know, then having awareness of that. So I think is such a gift almost. And it's maybe it's painful in some sense, but you can make it into a gift. And then there's all this learning and growth. You know, here's this other piece I would love to talk with you about, which is just how can sort of music play a role in raising social consciousness. And I feel like this is such a good question to ask you because you have been one of those musicians, you know, who's in some sense been out there speaking what I would call as gentle musical activism, you know, whether it was Hum Dekhenge, Faiz Ahmed Faiz poems during, you know, the Shaheen Bagh protests and the farmers protests, and, you know, singing that in Tamil and then in Kannada and then a version in Punjabi of Ni Anjade and Tamil. And so, you know, I'm just really, I'm curious about, you know, and I think you've been part of T.M. Krishna's initiative to take, you know, Carnatic music to public spaces. You've sung in the Chennai Metro and, you know, just sitting down on the floor. So I'm just curious what you feel about this whole topic, because I mean, you have already expressed yourself out there, but there are plenty of musicians who choose maybe not to step out of the sabhas or the concert halls and to do this. So what has your internal process been? I'd love to explore and hear more.
Okay, so before we get into that, when you said, what is the word you used? Pulling the social consciousness. Rising. So by social consciousness, can you tell me what are those elements that for you make it that?
Yeah, so, you know, I the way I'm seeing it is just kind of keeping like the conversation diverse and keeping these issues alive in the public discourse, in our sort of like the fabric of our society, and doing it in a way that's different from mainstream media, you know, because I feel mainstream media is kind of maybe can be very polarized or bombarding. And there's something about music that is far gentler and has the capacity to unify, but also I think make very powerful statements. Like so many of our Bhakti reformers and Sufi poets, like I think of Kabir, for example, right? Like there was no question he was a social reformer, and he was constantly inviting people to burn the market down, join me, ask, like, burn your structures down, like, ask these questions with me. But he also managed to unify people and always speak for peace. So it's just that, you know, so that to me is an example of raising social consciousness, because it really was a kind of reformative moment. Just that, like, how do you keep this alive, and how do you do it in a way that takes people along, that, you know, that is not polarizing in some sense? At least that's how I see it.
One thing is that I think, like you said, music intrinsically has its pluses. It really impresses you immediately. It impacts you immediately. And at the same time, let's not forget that therefore music is the sugar coating for any kind of bitter pill or any kind of facade that you want to also put. These can also be curtains because we do use music because it has an emotional quotient to it, and it really hits you in your most vulnerable points. Therefore, that's the nature of music, or that's the force that music has. But how it's put to use is what, right from even your ad jingles, they are the most wow stuff, you know, like music used in the most perfect way where you're bought or sold immediately. So it automatically just hits your consciousness immediately. So to kind of be careful about how you're using it is important, I guess. So, and we all need entertainment also. So that's one part of it, but it can do more. And that's the tricky part. It can do a lot more. And so what is that more, and how do you use it, in what context? So knowing that is where, like you said, if there's a society where the polarities are decreased, and you become open to kind of having many more voices, I guess that is exactly what I'm anyway doing with my music, of saying, okay, I can sing in different languages. I don't have to choose one language over the other just because of my comfort, just because of my familiarity, you know. Of course, Tamil is my language. But for each one, their language is the most beautiful one, you know. So there can't be two ways about it. Similarly, be it religion, be it practice, be it culture, be it where they come from, their home, mm-hmm. their homeland. For each one, their home is their home. And that's the paradise. So I guess it's about not making sure you don't want to take control of the other, or to prove that I am better than you, or I am right and you're wrong. So that's where I think I'm trying to place my music.
Yeah, I hear that. And it's an interesting, I'm really glad you lifted up how music by itself is neutral and can be used, like you said, to in service of a consumerist society, to get us to just, you know, be more materialistic. Or
consumeristic, ideological, exactly. Religious, everything. Yeah. So there is agenda, there is propaganda everywhere. Yes. Yes. So even in a different way, if you see, Kabir also had his agenda. Of it's course. Just that we are aligning with that agenda right now, you know, but everything has an agenda, actually, yes. Including myself, I guess.
Yes. No, I really like you. I love that you named that nuance. And I think the hope is that that we are aligned with maybe the agenda where we have awareness that we are trying to actually go beyond polarities or dualities. We really don't, we want to be in a place of shared power. And we ideally want to be, I mean, this is the ideal we're aiming for, actually, where we really step beyond that field into sort of Rumi's field, right? Of beyond right doing and wrong doing, there's a field there. So I think that we're hoping for that. And we're trying to use it in service of that, but to have constant, I think that questing spirit, to have, you know, this questioning within you, like, what am I using my music in service of? What, you know, what, where are my responsibilities? Where's, you know, where am I right now? Just having that sense. I think that is, I hear you describing that as something you do, and, you know, and I think that's that's the least and maybe the most we can promise, that we remain committed to that process of being aware. Yeah. You know, here's, I'm going to pause for our conversation for a minute to just invite audience questions. And, you know, I think we have a couple coming in, but I think given that it's Raksha Bandhan, Rakhi, we don't have too many live listeners today. But those of you who are live, if you have questions for Bindu, please either just send them in to askask@servicespace.org or just use our, you know, our question box on our live stream page to send us a question. So while we wait for that, and I have a couple, I will ask you just one question on money, on your relationship to money, which I think is, you know, which it's a topic we actually really enjoy exploring in sort of the service space ecosystem, because we try and run all our projects on Gift. And it's trying to align with a different way of looking at forms of capital and flow. And, you know, I was listening to an interview, I think, where, you know, you said I think your words were that you were scared of losing the sanctity of your music by making money from it, or, you know, beginning to derive sustenance from it, but that your partner, Vasu, actually was really an inspiration for you in this domain, that, you know, and I would love to just hear that, hear what you feel about this, you know, like, yeah, any thoughts or insights?
Yeah, okay. So there are a couple of things to this. One is money by itself and the value. And the other is your lifestyle and your needs. So there are two different things. So especially with art and artists and musicians, right now it's different, but there was a time when you're devoted to your art, and hence to expect money or speak money is lesser than the elevated space or the divine space art is in, kind of a thing. But I think it's good to debunk all that, to say we are at the end of the day human, and we are doing the work that we can in the way that we can. Even artists are doing that, you know, we're using our skills and our knowledge to do what we can to live, survive, thrive, be better, and also go buy whatever we want, ice cream or shoes. So money is therefore needed. So for me to be okay to say, yeah, I have to put certain kind of a value to something, at the same time, I can't be driven only by that. I mean, what is my focus? It's to lead a comfortable life, do what I can do, and have my music. So to prioritize time, and now time is money, sort of. So to kind of balance, a calculation is needed. At the same time, so like you said, what I learned from Vasu is to say, it's okay to ask, to put a value in terms of money and say, this is what, like, even the person who supplies the sound, we'll say, this is the cost of my equipment. This is the cost of my setup. This is the cost of transport. Everything has a cost. Then suddenly the artist doesn't have a cost. So this was the argument he came with, and it made sense. You're so invaluable that you can't put money to it. Therefore, there is no money. It's a nice thought to bypass and say, oh, I think I'm too good that there is no price to it. But no, I think it's okay to put a value to it. At the same time, like you said, and I know where a gifting economy and gift space comes from, you kind of pay forward. Similarly, there are places, spaces where you know you're getting things, you're receiving things in a way which is not monetary. You know, it's people, it's relationship, it's wisdom, it's knowledge, it's other kind of barter system of help. It's many times for me, it's food and shelter. So these are all very important. And sometimes I love it when things happen then and there, and they finish then and there. You don't have to necessarily hoard or accumulate for a later, better tomorrow. So there can be things that are instant gratification. So now I sing and you give me food, I'm happy. You're also happy. So it's okay to kind of see how this relating is happening and what is the context. So if I go perform somewhere else, yes, kind of. And there is, I think, in a sense of how you hold your value, your art, the value of your art also. And I'm not talking only about myself. This is a conversation that recurs again and again and again in terms of musicians and artists, where we are all trying to understand, therefore, what am I worth? What is my music worth? How am I to measure it? Is it by popularity? Is it by the way I, the money I make? Is it by the numbers in my Instagram, social following, the subscribers, my YouTube right now? Or the number of audience, am I singing to 30 or 500 or 1,000 or 5,000? How do I put a price to all this? So this is ever-changing, ever-negotiating kind of a thing. Now artists have started talking to each other about it to say, hey, we all have these confusions. So how do we deal with it? We are at least supportive of each other and we are able to say it's okay to ask, put your foot down. And sometimes have contracts. It's okay. To kind of protect yourself, say this is my offering and let me be clear about it. So there's a lot of trust in this, and in terms of learning and teaching also there's a flow. Sometimes I kind of say this could be my fees. Sometimes I say, okay, see what you can give. I also see, therefore, are my needs met? My needs might be different from somebody else's needs. So I think I'm better at it now. But it's important, like you said, Gayatri, we are not salaried people. So it's important for us to have a way to balance this and to also not feel pressurized by others to say, no, you know, you're selling yourself or something like that. No, it's just a service and the service has some value. We are also putting our time into our practice and learning the skill and what happened to all that time and stuff like that. So I think we all have to speak a lot more about it and make money a neutral energy than seeing it as a necessary evil or something like that.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. That was like a thing, very open and honest and vulnerable exploration. So thank you for sharing that. And we have quite a lot of audience questions. I'm going to try and ask you some. So I have one question here from Rupa, who says, since you mentioned about Bachanas, have you explored the songs of Avade Akkal, who wrote a lot of songs questioning the traditional mindset and focusing on the truth of reality? She hailed from Tirunelveli districts and her song used to be sung in the household by women there.
I haven't explored it, Rupa, but if there's a way I can connect with you, I would love to unlock that and explore more, learn more. If this is the Rupa I know who it is, then I can just hop to your house and have this conversation. Or please, my email ID is bindhumalini@gmail.com. We can connect.
Yes, sounds lovely. So, and then there's a question. There's a lot of gratitude from Preeti and some questions about fear. So let me read this. She says, the song is sang right at the beginning and the explanation resonated so deeply that it gave me goosebumps. There's a deep stirtha in your voice that settles something in us that really needs rest. So my question is regarding your sharing about acknowledging fear and being okay with fear. Since these times seem to offer us fear left, right, and center. So could you share the process and the steps in which this acknowledgement became possible for you? And is there ways that can be incorporated as a practice? Think just about your process.
For me, in a very practical way to come to that is to, when I'm possessed or when I'm in the grips of fear, I behave in a certain way. My mind immediately hurtles towards all the next 100 steps going wrong. and where it's going to end. So it's quickly putting that roadmap, and probably if the fear is too extreme, already manifesting all that. And the fear also tightens me up, and my breath becomes very, very, very unpredictable and uneven. So it's a very animal response that way, you know, very physical, very. So then to first either pull back the mind or regulate the breath becomes the way I deal with it. And then if there is grief, where does it come from? Where is this fear coming from? It means it's fear of something that it already knows of. So trying to then quickly go and see where is this coming from. It's not so easy, but if I have one particular answer for that time, I'm like, okay, I'll make do with this right now and see what I can do. Because we know it's fight, flight, or freeze. I don't run away. Mostly my response is either fight or freeze. So both are not very helpful. Fight aggravates it, and freeze doesn't allow me to kind of process what's actually going on. So so to buy time is also probably good at that time. And I guess singing buys time and also distracts people at that moment, including myself. So it also regulates the breath immediately and calms the mind to come to the present. So that's why music and singing becomes that safe space. And that's why I guess we are all constantly listening to more and more music now, more than ever. I don't know if I answered that. And Rupa, what Rupa said about Vachana, I just wanted to also add to it that there's been a post-threshold or pre-threshold or through-threshold to consciously excavate a lot of women voices has been another continuous process now. So Lingamma, singing Lingamma, and in fact, what I sang is from the production threshold. We kind of pulled that. And so I'm more than happy to work with many more voices of women and to keep it just going. Yes.
Beautiful. Thank you. And here's this other really interesting question from Rohit, who says, you know, there's a content part to music, and beyond doubt that content is powerful. But at the same time, we live in the world where some of the best content is available at the click of a mouse. So if you want social change, what is the importance of setting a deeper shared collective context? Because human beings respond much more to context than to content. Does that resonate with you? Have you felt that? And what has worked for you when you're trying to build context rather than content?
Yeah, hey, that's super. So I think when I was doing the Here For You sessions in during the second wave, more than content, I created context because like you said, any content outside of its context could make sense or completely be misinterpreted and quite meaningless also, in fact. So context is as important as content. And I managed to do this every day, a 15-minute space, a regulated space of from 8:45 p.m. to 9. The offer was not even the offer. The whole idea was music and silence. And the context is that it's a non-judgmental space. It's a space where there is no ask from me to others, nor is there an ask from the others to me. There is no farmaish, nothing. It's a space where nothing is asked, nothing is guaranteed. So that was the next experiment with creating to see if a context like that is possible. And to be in yourself, for yourself, was the other thing that I tried, and it worked, where nobody needs to put their audio on, video on, Not they, do they have to say, wow, wow, what beautiful, nothing, no, nothing. So that also worked. And like you said, everything is a click away. So we could probably go to it immediately or endlessly postpone things. That's the two things I see myself doing. That I either always say, it's available, I'll do it later. Like how I don't call many of my friends because I'm like, they are a phone call away and I'll do that later. But now I'm like, I don't know about tomorrow, you know, now, especially with the pandemic, it's better to just pick up the phone. The other is sometimes then my Baba always used to say that, and which I think finally now I'm building this practice, is he'll say, okay, fix a time for your practice and just do it then. Even if it's 5 minutes, not 2 hours, do that in that time. And I just couldn't do it. Now I'm doing it. But so this 8:45 was a practice to say, can I stick to showing up? Just show up, nothing else. There is nothing else than to show up. So that is in the other context. And what I sang there didn't matter. So the content didn't matter. Everything else was already set. So then everything else automatically fitted. No matter what the content was, people took it, and I gave it, or I took it in a way that kind of made sense to that context. So everything was seen with that lens. So I'm probably trying to see if those spaces can also be created where you don't have to necessarily put everything out there, but maybe can have a space of anonymity, of being anyone, being everyone, being nothing. Rohit, was that okay?
I think you answered his question quite beautifully. There's another interesting question here from David T. Mata, who asks, what about encouraging people to play or compose, to not just appreciate art in general, but to actually engage proactively in it?
Yeah, so that's the other thing I work with, is that anybody and everybody can sing, anybody and everybody can dance, can move. It's part of us. So that means all of us can express. We have a right to express the way it comes, the way we want to, the way we are at that moment. It need not be perfect. Imperfection is okay as long as it's part of what your journey is asking of you. So it is important to create, to compose, and because everything is subject to change anyway. So if today I compose something and tomorrow I'm like, I think I can do something else, I'll do it. So I can hold more workshops of how to explore creativity, how to explore idea of improvising, building, constructing, deconstructing everything. And I also explore something called singing body, where I'm trying to involve singing and moving at the same time simultaneously, which informs and disrupts each other at the same time. So creation is that process for me of sculpting by additive process or kind of by a subtractive process. So yes, I'm more than happy to create spaces of creation, exploring creation and creativity.
Yeah, thank you for that. Especially I think for the offer and the willingness to do that, that you engage in it, and just also for naming that art, music, whatever forms of creative self-expression, it's almost like a birthright. You said everyone can do it, right? Just it does. It's almost like our, like, yeah, birthright for human beings and all sorts of beings, right? I think of birds making nests and, you know, just the different forms of art that come. It's kind of a natural urge, I think, that comes up from, you know, the life in you almost, the creative impulse. So beautiful. And we have a question from Anish who asks, what do you think art can do in a world that is crowded with media that resembles art?
Can you repeat that again?
What can art do in a world that is crowded with media that resembles art? So I think if I am paraphrasing or hearing this, maybe, right, it's, I think he's alluding to the fact that there's a lot of, more superficial representations of what could be, you know, what is actually a very deep creative urge. So maybe living in that world of overwhelm with so much of that artistic media around us and, you know.
I'm not really sure if I understood this right, but at the same time, I'll be very sure that I do not want to judge depth and superficiality. Not that I've never done that. I've also said, all that. I just made some sounds here, but I hope you understood what I'm saying. But then the thing is, it's really a buffet. Our life is a buffet right now. So we can move away from what is not. I'm not saying we need to turn a blind eye, but at the same time, who are we to judge? Everybody is... in their pace and in their taste, in their flavors, what they like to savor. So what becomes deep and what becomes superficial is completely personal also, and where we come from, what impacts us. At the same time, I understand that for many of us, including me, things can very easily get very overwhelming in terms of sheer number, sheer quantity. But in that quantity also, there's therefore promise of many good quality also, like you're getting. So it's about picking, choosing, and sometimes drawing lines. If I suffer from information indigestion, that means I have to shut my phone. I have to stop consuming. I can't help the fact that there's a buffet, but I have to say stop. Yes.
I love that phrasing. I think I will ask you, we still have a few questions, but we have time for one last question and then a question we generally end with. So there's another question from Rohit who says, you know, that you put a lot of heart and soul into your work. And there must be many stories of people being touched and seeds of transformation being sown. So maybe one or two stories that come to your mind that you could share with us. And
Rohit, call me. We should have this on a one-on-one basis. I shouldn't be like making stories of others' lives. It's okay.
I hear that. I can say, speaking personally, that yes, I've definitely been very deeply moved by your singing, the Kabir Project, or even just watching The Threshold. So yes, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who, you know, don't have, maybe who are not taking the moment to exactly call you or message you or tell you that. So there's all the unseen.
No, I get it. But
you do get feedback.
The thing is, I feel we are all just co-travelers, because these songs by themselves have constantly changed my life. So that is what I get from these songs and singing these songs. So if it happens to me, I'm sure it's happening to everybody else, because that's exactly what I'm experiencing. Like, I can even date and mark a big shift in my life just because of a song. So it's pretty much like that. I can say, from this song, this day onwards, I think my life changed this way, and from here it changed this way. I can map my life with songs. It's like that.
Beautiful. So, I'm going to ask you one final question that we ask all our guests on this, calls we invite them onto, which is, what can we, as, volunteers in the service space ecosystem, what can we do to support, your life journey and your the work you're putting out in the world? How can we be of service? And then I would invite you to sing us into the closing. Maybe one of those songs that, has changed your life. We'd love to hear.
As long as you're constantly doing what you're already doing, I think it's great. You're slowly changing the cogs silently. It's like these big tectonic plates slowly moving. Otherwise, we'll have earthquakes. So it's nice, slow and steady, I guess. And I know I can reach out to the whole group there when and if I need. Other than that, like I said, even this awakening talk, you are so silent that this invite that you've put out came from other sources for me. Then I'm like, oh, this is the invite. I realize you're so connected, because people I had no idea about were kind of writing back to me saying, oh, I'm going to add a SVP to this, and will this be recorded? I'm like, okay, their network is pretty large. They pretty much are in touch with everybody I seem to know or not know. So that makes... So I will reach out for sure. And is it me or... Okay, it's... was that a very safe answer or was it okay? Don't know what to ask right now. But
that is perfect, because it's open. You can reach out at any time. And yes, if a more concrete answer comes to you, please, like you said.
So I should sing now, right?
We would love that.
I have my map of songs, but let's have it like a concert someday. I can tell stories of the journey of the song and what this did, what that did. But I know if I don't sing the farmaish that was already put there, I'll have to listen to music after that. From So I will safely sing that song now. Am I audible?
Yes.
Hariro araro Hariro araro உன்னை மரத்து கொம்பை வளைத்தோரு தொட்டில் தொங்குது அதில் பூவினை போல மேனி படைத்த குழந்தை தூங்குது புன்னை மரத்து கொம்பை வளைத்தோரு தொட்டில் தொங்குது அதில் பூவினை போல மேனி படைத்த குழந்தை தூங்குது ஆரீரோ ஆராரோ ஆரீரோ Araroo. சலன இலையசைந்த ஜாழை காட்டுது. சலசலன இலையசைந்த ஜாழை காட்டுது. அதில் சில சில எனத்தின்றல் தவழ்ந்து தொட்டிலையாட்டுது. அதில் சில சில எனத்தின்றல் தவழ்ந்து தொட்டிலையாட்டுது. புன்னை மரத்து கொம்பை வளைத்தோரு தொட்டில் தொங்குது. அதில் பூவினை போல மேனி படைத்த குழந்தை தூங்குது. ஆரீரோ ஆராரோ ஆரீ ஆராரோ. என்ன நினைத்து காலை உதைத்து பாப்பா சிரிக்குது. என்ன நினைத்து காலை உதைத்து பாப்பா சிரிக்குது. அதன் சின்ன சின்ன மணி கண்ணுக்குள்ளே ஒரு நாடகம் நடக்குது. அதன் சின்ன சின்ன மணி கண்ணுக்குள்ளே ஒரு நாடகம் நடக்குது. பொன்னை மரத்து கொம்பை வளைத்தோரு தொட்டில் தொங்குது. அதில் பூவினை போல மேனி படைத்த குழந்தை தூங்குது. ஆரீரோ ஆராரோ ஆரீரோ Kaitri, I want to sing two more lines of a different thing. While I was singing this, I was just thinking about you asking about Hum Dekhenge and about activism and music.
Yes,
so,
yes.
I just want to sing these two lines of Kabir where he says that we're all born human and the divisions that we do is what we do. So I just wanted to sing this to say that to constantly be aware of is the space even in music that is created is inclusive, celebrating the differences, celebrating the diversity but yet inclusive, or is a song or the singing itself creating and or othering the space in the way it is sung or whatever. So I'll just sing this and then I'll yes. be in silence. ஜனம் மானோஸ் ஹோத் ஓ வெயிட் ஜனம் மானோஸ் ஹோத் சபயா ஜானத் சன்சார் பன்யக் சூத் करवाहे बन्यक सूद करवाहे कहे कबीर पुकारा बन्यक सूद करवाहे कहे कबीर पुकार
Thank you so much, especially for overshooting a little and singing us those two songs. Thank you for the patience of our listeners for staying with us. We like to end just as we began, which is with a minute of silence, with the prayers and the gratitude that any goodwill generated on this call, may it go out into the world, into our hearts, wherever it is needed the most. So, a minute of silence.
Thank you for listening to a recording of Awaken Calls. To access archives, visit us at www.awaken.org. And to get more involved, volunteer at www.servicespace.org.